Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to Speaking of Sex. Today we are joined by Rachel Kramer Bussell. She is a powerhouse in the world of erotica and sex journalism. She has edited over 50 anthologies and regularly writes for a wide range of publications and websites, ranging from the Oprah magazine to the New York Times to several sex-positive and feminist websites. Her writing is always provocative, insightful, and most of all, a pleasure to read. We first interviewed Rachel way back on episode 14, and now here we are at episode number 149, and we're thrilled to welcome her back to talk about her new book, Dirty Dates, Erotic Fantasies for Couples. Rachel, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Thank you for having me back.
So you have edited over 50 erotica anthologies. What was the inspiration for this specific collection?
Well, I think that on the writing side, a lot of people tend to start out writing about people who are just meeting or, you know, it's their first encounter, because of course there's inherent drama in, you know, how are you going to get this person you like into bed, or what are you going to do with them? And you know, that I there's nothing wrong with that, but there's an exercise I give in the erotica writing workshops I teach sometimes, and I say, okay, write about a couple who've been together 10 years or more, because I think that really pushes writers to think about sex and eroticism and kink, and if they're writing about, you know, kinky stuff in a different way. And now, these aren't all in Dirty Dates couples who've been together a certain amount of time, but I think that when you've established that it's a couple doing something, there's a different tone to it, and there's other kinds of adventures they can have versus that first time, new relationship energy kind of thing. And that's what I wanted to explore, and especially within the context of BDSM, which, you know, ranges in this book. I think that, you know, you can push the envelope a little, both with your partner, because you know them, so you know what's going to push their buttons. And for the reader, you know, I want this to be, it's not a how-to, but I want it to be inspiring for couples. I want it to be something couples can read together and enjoy, and just to explore a range of ways couples can interact and have fun with kink. And as I was just saying, I was thinking of one review that came out recently. And of course, because I'm myself, and I know other people do this, you know, you always focus on the ones that are more critical than the ones that are less critical. But basically it said, you know, this is kind of kink light. And I don't disagree. This is not necessarily the most super in-depth, like, done, you know, there might be that. But, like, you know, I think whether you think it's kink light or not is really going to depend on where you are in your kinky exploration. But something I do with all my books is really try to appeal to as broad an audience as possible. I'm not saying this book is going to appeal to everyone, but I want it to be something that people who do identify as kinky will enjoy, as well as people who might never have thought of some of these things or even heard of some of these things, that they can also enjoy.
Yeah, I love that. You know, we recently released a course on kinky sex, and we had to really think about our definition of kinky, and it was harder to define than we first imagined.
Yeah.
How did you define kinky as you were approaching editing this anthology?
You know, I don't think I formally sat down and said, okay, this would count as kinky and this wouldn't. It was kind of a matter of, okay, does this fit in with a broad range of what might be kinky? And in fact, in my introduction, the very first sentence is, what does it mean to be a quote kinky couple? Does it mean, and then it goes on, does it mean both partners hit the dungeon every night or have one in their home? Does it mean wearing a collar? Does it mean a 24/7 BDSM lifestyle? Yes, 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 and no. The truth is, like so many aspects of sex, kinky is in the eye of the beholder. And that was something that is an important value to me in terms of not trying to dictate to my authors or to readers, you know, what should count as kinky or as erotic or as sex, because it's not my job necessarily to define that. And this isn't meant to be a definitive guide to all the kinky things you can do. It's certain kinky things that these characters do. And I mean, the other thing I try to do with my anthologies is have a a range of topics and subjects and scenarios. So I knew I wanted female subs and male subs, stories from the point of view of the dominant and the submissive. There's a couple stories that are about couples swapping or, you know, switching off. One is usually the dominant, and in this case, they're the sub or vice versa. I wanted to show as much of a range as I could within, you know, the word count. Obviously, this book could be two or three times as big and still not cover every realm of kinkiness. But, you know, because it's fiction, I don't have to do the same thing as someone who's doing a nonfiction book and trying to be comprehensive. But I would say I want it to be something that someone who's not even into this stuff, you know, knows, okay, whether they identify as vanilla or not, like they're like, okay, I don't like spanking. I don't like bondage. That's fine. I hope that they can still appreciate the entertainment value of these stories, because this is my values in terms of erotica. I don't think it's so much about, or it's, I don't think it's only about, I as a person identify with this character because I'm exactly like them. Some people might find that in some of the stories, but I think it's about, I can appreciate where this character is coming from. I can get into their head, whether or not their head is like my head, and I can vicariously appreciate their thought process and their, you know, what turns them on.
Yeah, and I think that's so much the beauty of erotica. We're constantly referring people to your books as fantasy fodder. We really believe that anthologies are a great way to sample a lot of different sexual scenarios and pay attention to what turns you on. But we don't necessarily recommend trying to recreate the scenario in your actual sex life. That can be really dangerous. So how do you think about this divide between fantasy and reality? Do you think that these stories are scripts for play or simply fantasy to prime the imagination?
I mean, I think this is the very same topic that comes up when we're talking about visual porn, where people say, oh, this is not sex ed, but you can still appreciate it as the fantasy. Now, I will say, I believe these are fiction. I wouldn't want someone to, like, to the letter try to do something that's in one of my books necessarily, or at least without other input or research. But I, especially with BDSM, but really with anything, I do try to not put anything that would be unsafe or dangerous if someone tried it at home. You know, I mean, there's definitely things that I think probably, you know, could theoretically happen, but probably wouldn't happen. I mean, in my story, there's a woman, you know, like eating in a very suggestive way in public and, you know, wearing a blindfold in a car, not while she's driving. Okay. I would never do that. you know, and doing things that, you know, theoretically you could do in public, but, you know, probably would get you unwanted attention. So I hope readers can figure out the difference there between what, you know, might be feasible to try at home and what might not. But it's not like I'm ever saying to my authors, you know, have you done this? I mean, I will say the one area where, you know, that has come up, sometimes there's been, I don't think for this book, but there's been stories where there's a complicated kind of rope bondage or other sort of intricate, detailed element of BDSM. And I've consulted either the author or someone else to say, like, does this ring true? Is this how they would talk about it? Or does this work, you know, in terms of the mechanics, so to speak, of how this would play out in real life, just so that it rings as authentic. But I do think that, you know, I don't believe that erotica writers should hold themselves specifically to what could happen in real life, because there's so many things that we might fantasize about that either we wouldn't want to do in real life, that would be impossible to do in real life, or that might be dangerous in real life. But I do feel a responsibility in terms of, like, I wouldn't have someone just tied up overnight or gagged for, you know, hours on end and, like, you know, possibly, you know, suffering in a non-kinky way. You know, I mean, that's my personal take on it. But, you know, I do want to be clear that it does say on the cover erotic fantasy. So these are fictional stories. But I think people do get inspiration from erotica, whether explicitly, you know, directly following something, or just, I think it's usually more likely broader ideas like, oh, this person had someone wear this corset, or this person, this couple switched, or even just the kind of language you might use, or other ideas. You know, I hope that these spark discussion probably more than anything else, because I think exploring erotic fantasies, kinky or not, is going to start with discussing what your fantasies are.
That makes a lot of sense. And I was wondering, you know, a couple buys your book, and then what then? Do you have any suggestions about how to use a book like this as a tool?
I think, well, one great way is reading out loud to each other. Uh-huh. Then you can see the other person's reaction. And you also, you know, you can't pre-plan what you're going to think about an erotic story, or what's going to come to your mind, or what will be triggered by that. I mean, good or bad. I mean, it could lead you down a path of, oh, gosh, that reminds me of this horrible thing that happened this time with my ex. I'd never want to try that. I mean, those are also valuable discussions to have. But, you know, I like the idea of reading out loud, because then you're taking something that someone else created, this story, but you're putting your own spin on it, because you're using your own voice. And maybe, you know, you get to a part where someone's, you know, putting nipple clamps on, and you're like, oh yeah, let me tell you about this time that I used nipple clamps, or I've always wanted to try nipple clamps, but never had a partner who I could do it with. So I think it kind of allows the reader, and then therefore the couple, to be an active participant in it. I mean, I think erotica, you're not really just a passive reader. I mean, you can be a passive reader, but I'm saying, I think a lot of people, myself included, when they're reading erotica, their mind is both reading the little literal words on the page, as well as going in its own direction of maybe a memory or a fantasy of their own that adds to their take on the story.
Beautiful. And another way we recommend is having two different colored pens, and you can go through and highlight passages and make notes. And this works for a little bit for more shy couples, or for couples who don't have time to read together. And you can pass the book back and forth that way. And it becomes a real active tool for communicating what you are interested in, what you're not interested in. And I think this is just an amazing resource for couples that we need to use more often.
I think that's a great idea, too, for people. You know, I do think reading out loud can be good, but it's not for everyone. Like, some people might be able to, might not know how to do that, or might not want to be able to, you know, go there in person, or they might be long distance. I have heard about people, you know, sort of both having a book and each reading on their own, and then consulting each other, you know, or, you know, conversing about what they liked, what they didn't like. So I think definitely a book like this is, or any fiction really, is less a manual as a starter kit or a point of discussion. And by starter, I don't necessarily mean you're starting out in kink, but it's just a way to get ideas or think about what turns you on. You know, I don't want to put too much emphasis on, oh, you should get ideas from erotica. You might get ideas, but you might just enjoy the fantasy element of them for themselves, and then, you know, just have that infuse your relationship. I think just the act of reading erotica and knowing, okay, you're doing this thing that is about arousal, about, you know, turning you on, you know, not that every story is necessarily going to turn you on. That's investing in your own erotic pleasure, like the same as if you're taking the time to masturbate. Like, if you're doing it alone, you're valuing your own erotic pleasure.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it doesn't have to be an activity necessarily. It can be one line of dialogue, and the way it's delivered can help you realize that, ooh, that commanding, dominant really turns me on versus a different kind of dominance. So I think it's all of these different ideas that flood you and certain things come up. And so I think we're in agreement that this is an awesome tool. But let's talk about writing erotica. You're now teaching an online course about writing erotica. So what is the benefit of writing and activating your own fantasies and putting them down on paper?
I think one of the major benefits of erotic writing is that it even if you were mainly writing about things inspired by your life or based on your own fantasies, it forces you to be empathetic to other people's sexuality and fantasies. This is certainly the case in a class where you're hearing or reading other people's ideas. But, you know, one of the things I stress to my students is, okay, let's say you're writing from a submissive point of view. We still have to understand what the dominant is getting out of it. Otherwise, the story will be kind of lopsided. I think to best showcase a character's submission, we also want to know, you know, the dominant's point of view in some way. It doesn't literally have to be written from their point of view, but I think that really enhances the story. And I think people don't always think about that, whether in real life or in fiction. You know, sometimes they're so focused on themselves, and I don't mean that in a negative, selfish way. I just think, like, especially, let's say you identify as submissive, it might have taken you a while to figure that out, and you're sort of into exploring that you might not forget, but not acknowledge as much that the dominant might have been through a similar process of figuring out, okay, you know, I'm dominant. How do I deal with that? What do I do with that? So I think really digging into the writing can help you explore, the nuances of that, and also how your take on, in this case, BDSM is different or similar to other things you've heard. You know, I really push my authors and students to, you know, explain what it is about being tied up or being spanked that the character enjoys, or doing the tying up or doing the spanking, because you can't just assume, okay, I'm telling the reader I like being spanked, that they'll know why, because so many people have different reasons they enjoy being spanked. For some, it might be the pure physical sensation. Some, it might be a dominant submissive element. Some, it might be a combination of those and many other. I mean, that was skimming the surface. So I really think there's, you know, an infinite number of reasons someone might enjoy a certain kink, and the writer's job is to really flesh that out and explain that to the reader in a way that, you know, is erotic but continues the story. And that is not always something we consciously think about. So in writing, you have to consciously think about that, even if not every detail makes it into the story. That, I think, can be a very helpful exercise in terms of more broadly thinking about, okay, why are people into X, Y, or Z? You know, maybe you're writing about a fetish that is not your fetish. Then you really have to try to figure out, why does this character like licking someone's feet? And, you know, you can't just assume, okay, it's because of this. You have to really think about, like, where did this come from, and what does it mean to them? And is it always the same? Like, is it the same if they're licking person A's feet or person B's feet? Like, what is it about that, the personal element? Is it about the physical activity itself? I mean, there's so many questions you can ask. And those are the kinds of things that I push my students to really dig into. So not just the physical side, but the mental and emotional as well.
Do you ever have students become shy about writing their fantasies down? Like, they hit this wall of shame about externalizing what they're feeling?
I do. And I think, sometimes it is shame. I think more often it's fear of judgment. I think they are afraid of being judged by other students, by readers, by family. And that makes sense because, you know, we're often told these are things to keep private. I think even amongst otherwise liberal people who might say, oh, you know, do whatever you want in the privacy of your own bedroom. But once you start talking about it in public, and that includes writing about it, then that is still considered taboo or too much or too in your face. So I think people struggle with their own feelings about what other people will think. And that is something, and that really cuts across the board. I mean, I would include myself in that category. There are some things I've written about under pseudonyms. There are some things I've written about with my own name. But when it comes time to do a live reading, I get nervous about reading my own words because I can do it on the page. I'm fine with that. I've gotten used to that. And I really have never, I've never really personally struggled with putting it on the page, except for those occasional once in a while pseudonyms. But reading it live, that's where I start to feel, again, it's not really shame, but just I don't know what people will think and I'm uncomfortable and I'm literally in the same room as them. So I feel that too. And I think, you know, everyone handles that in a different way. What I try to instill in people is, you know, you shouldn't let that hinder your writing process because you're at home or you're wherever you're writing by yourself. Like, no one has to read what you're writing if you don't want them to. It can still be valuable to write it and then figure out whether you're going to do something else with it or not. But even if it just stays on your computer, I think that is still a valuable process.
And are your classes for aspiring professionals or are they for anyone who wants to activate their voice?
You know, both. I mean, they're for anyone. A lot of people are newcomers to erotica. Some of them maybe have written other fiction or other nonfiction and want to explore this. Some are starting out in some form of publishing, whether self-publishing or with a publisher, and want to know more about the industry and how to break into it. So I, online, where I have more time, I give insight into what publishers are looking for, what agents are looking for, what editors are looking for. And I think people don't always know. It might start out as a fun hobby and, you know, a character or a story might captivate them and might go on to become a novel and they might do more of it. So I do also include information about pseudonyms, like how to pick a pseudonym and how to claim space on social media around that, because I think even if right now you think, oh, I'm just writing a story or two, you don't know what you're going to be doing in 5 years. Your story or two now might turn into novels and a whole career or side career in a few years. So I try to give them the tools to think about that and, you know, use a pseudonym that they would be happy with, you know, going forward. And I'm planning to expand my online class offerings in 2016. I don't know exactly when or where or how, but if you follow my website, Rachel Kramer Bustle, or get on my newsletter, or follow my social media, I will be posting about it. I just am trying to pin down exactly how that's going to happen. But I really enjoy it because, especially online, because people can participate from around the world. And I think that, you know, erotica is not limited to the United States. There's people all over the world who want to explore these topics and are doing so. And I think a lot of what I do, I mean, I do teach specifics about how to, you know, make your stories more vivid and where to get ideas. But I would say, you know, at least a quarter of what I do, if not half, is providing that encouragement for the people who want to do this but have these qualms we were just talking about, you know, social propriety and what are people going to think and what if this person reads it and thinks I'm this because of what I wrote. I feel like a good part of my job is, you know, digging into what those fears are and helping people, you know, decide how to approach them, whether that's using a pseudonym or, you know, maybe you're writing about something that happened in real life, so you change someone's looks and hair and profession and whatever, you disguise or you change things around or you do something so that, worst case, if people found out that you wrote it, you know, they wouldn't necessarily know that it's about them.
Yeah. I love it. Activating erotic voices around the world. Beautiful. And you'll find a link to the book, Dirty Dates, and Rachel's website over at pleasuremechanics.com under the show notes for this episode, episode number 149. Grab your copy of Dirty Dates. It's hot off the presses now and is a perfect tool to explore your own kinky fantasies and activate your erotic imagination. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.